This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
And we are live once again. It is the spoiler room. It is the first spoiler room of October, our horror film month, and I've got a room full of indie film directors. That's right. We are talking one reviewer and, well, right now, three indie film directors with us today. We may be joined with more later on in the program. And tonight, we've got the familiar face of the big fucking deal himself, Mr. Glenn Bittner. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing pretty damn good. I'll be doing better in 2.5 days.
Yes, exactly. We got the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival coming up. And speaking of the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival, we have the director of the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival, as well as filmmaker, director of Dead Weight, and the short film Pity, Mr. John Pata. How are you tonight, sir? Welcome back.
Hey, thank you very much. And I will be better in 4.5 days when this festival is over.
When the festival is over, John will be even better.
Yes, I will.
And also joining us today, director Andrew Shearer. He directs a slew of films.
I just want to say I am honored to be asked to do this, to participate. Thank you very much for asking me to do this.
Hey, we're glad to have you. Talking to you a lot on Film Jerk, so figured to have you on the show. It's been a while since we have John, and I kind of wanted to have indie film directors only in the room tonight because we're going to be talking indie horror films. I thought it was appropriate considering the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival, which we are coming up to shortly, and I will be covering on WeLoveFilm.com, and also the fact that it's just horror month of October. So I actually asked a number of listeners for questions, and surprisingly enough, I got one back. And we're going to start off tonight with their question, because it's a really good startup warm-up question. Film fan Johnny, who is a YouTube reviewer, check out his channel. Just search for, I believe it's Mr. Film Fan Johnny out there, and we'll put the link in the podcast. And he asked, how did you start in indie horror, and what were your inspirations? Let's first start with Mr. Andrew Shearer. How did you start in the indie film, and what was your inspirations?
Well, I really just wanted to be like John Waters and his friends. I had a bunch of friends from my punk rock band, and they just were all characters. And I love movies, and I always thought of myself as more of a movie guy than a rock and roll guy anyway. So I just started, like, writing stuff for them to do. And, we loved that, and we loved the story of Evil Dead, Sam Raimi and his friends. We just took inspiration from anybody who didn't live in a movie industry place and didn't make their films in a movie industry place. And drew inspiration from the fact that just like some guy and his buddies could make something that was really, really incredible. So I would definitely say those were the big two that did it for us. Just knowing that someone else grabbed a camera and just did it and made us grab a camera and just do it.
Mr. John Pata, how did you get started in indie film, and what were your inspirations?
Yeah, I totally gotta agree with what Andrew said, just about people that grabbed a camera and did it. The story of Evil Dead was definitely one of them. And then hearing Lloyd Kaufman say all the time, just do it. If you got an idea, just fucking do it. And then the big thing that pushed me over was reading Robert Rodriguez's Rebel Without a Crew and just the story about how he made El Mariachi and was very much just, I'm going to do it and I don't fucking care. So that's ultimately what really pushed me into doing it.
Yeah. Awesome. And Mr. Glenn Bittner, what about you, sir? What was your inspirations, and how did you get into indie filmmaking?
Well, none of that shit. No. I read the Rodriguez one, and I read Lloyd Kaufman's Make Your Own Damn Movie and stuff like that, and I've always been like a movie buff, but that's not really got me. It was the whole, I had that idea of doing this, but I never actually, it was always that thing that seemed out of reach to me until that fucker John Pata had Oshkosh Horror Film Festival. And I went there and I got to see, I mean, as much as like Evil Dead and El Mariachi is independent stuff, I knew my first outing was not going to crank out an Evil Dead. But then I saw some of the stuff at Oshkosh Horror. I met some of these filmmakers, and I'm like, well, these fuckers are just like me. It's not some guy who wrote a book who has also done these other great movies now. It's like, these are just some people from Madison, man. I'm as good as someone from Madison, I hope. I'm from Milwaukee. We're inherently city, right? No. But yeah, it was actually really seeing that and meeting the people who actually did it. That's what really finally I'm like, well, fuck. I have a camera. My camera sucked, which I found a friend with a better camera. So there we go. And it was just like it was just finally taking that step and doing it. And now I'm kind of hooked, but I didn't realize how exhausting it can be too.
Yeah.
Even when I have other people doing the really hard work. I don't do the video editing. I don't do the sound editing. I just kind of give input and I have them push their buttons. Do this. And they do it, and it's magic, but still, it's all the decisions that you have to make, but yeah.
It's some great answers, guys. Really like those answers. I hope that gives some other people maybe inspiration to start making their own damn movie. And Glenn actually brought up a great point. I was wondering to get your guys' input. John, we'll start with you, because you've done both short and feature. For preparation for an indie film, I think people don't realize that it has just as much work, if not more, for people because you have a limited crew. Would you say you do for a short film as a feature, or is there a different amount of work for each of them?
There's, depending on how you do it, but I would say that it's almost the same amount of preparation. It just depends on how many days you're spreading that over. Like when we shot Dead Weight, that was a 10-day shoot, and then when we shot Pity, that was only a 2-day shoot. And Dead Weight was a lot of rural shots that we just used natural light, where Pity was all shot inside a hangar, basically a soundstage, so we had to create that whole environment. So in a way, there was more preparation that went into Pity because we had a lot more lights and a lot more technical stuff that we had to figure out, a rain machine and the lights and just the fog and the atmosphere, where Dead Weight was a lot more just run and gun. But you're... whether it's 2 days, it's 10 days, it's 20 days, it's 30 days, you still got to prepare. And I would say they're similar levels of preparation. It was just that they were handled a little differently, or exported a little differently.
Mm-hmm. And Andrew, would you agree? Anything to add to that about the preparation between a feature and a short?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, shorts are a lot of times seen as like a training wheels movies, right? But really, for me, they were just ways to kind of to see things come to life quickly, ideas that I had. And a feature, I don't know, my first feature took up a year of my life, and most of that was because I was so intimidated by the idea of making one. So it's really, you're having to think on a larger scale in terms of story, in terms of schedule and all of that. And part of my reason for not making more features is because of just how involved it is. And I'm like, man, I could crank out like several shorts in a year and make an anthology. And that's way easier for me. So my last couple releases were anthologies rather than actual feature-length films.
Speaking of anthologies, just to let everyone know, we've been joined in the room by the director of Hole in the Wall, Wisconsin Horror Anthology, the man himself, Derek Carey. How are you, sir?
Good. Can you hear me?
Oh, we can hear you just fine. Your sexy voice is coming across loud and clear.
Oh, I like that.
So
coming across.
Coming.
Yes. You like that?
Look what happens no paddle as soon as he gets in here.
It's about time you fucking join. Bring out that dick for me to eat. Come on.
How many have you swallowed down? About five?
We were waiting for you so I could drop to my knees and make like a harbor seal. So
holy shit. I came to the right place then, I guess.
What the hell is this?
You're
going to come to the right place. And Glenn, we'll get to you. Now, you've done just shorts so far, but has your work in your shorts made you yearn to do a feature? Or are you... enjoying doing these shorter subjects?
Actually, I wanted to do a feature. I just had to do some shorts so I could figure out, I hopefully, you know, work out all the things that I can do wrong and figure out all the things I can do wrong first so that I don't do them when I'm trying to do a longer film. Mm-hmm. I'll still make plenty of mistakes, but there'll be that many fewer mistakes that I will hopefully make. I mean, I want to do features, and I have actual script I've been working on for one, so we'll see someday.
We look forward to seeing that. And Mr. Derek Carey, we were talking here, the setup between a short and a feature, and you kind of had to do both with the anthology film that you worked on. And what would you say? We're just getting the opinions of which takes more preparation, pre-work, the short or the feature. And which would you say, if you had any input on that?
The same type of work goes into both of them, but inherently the feature, of course, takes the cake because it's a grander scale. Although they're both a lot of work. Filmmaking in general is a lot of work. The anthology I did was rather unique in the fact that it was a bunch. It wasn't just myself that was doing it. The way that Andrew, his anthologies are more, he has a bunch of shorts that he's made and he puts them together, which are awesome. If you haven't seen Underground Cinema, you need to go and buy it at terrific.com right now, because it's absolutely
thank you,
amazing.
Derek. Thank you.
But my anthology that we put together, me and a bunch of Wisconsin horror freaks, it took a really long time, and it presented a lot of unique challenges that most films don't, because the whole thing wasn't entirely all in my hands. Kind of had to leave a lot up to good faith.
Yeah, Derek's Hole in the Wall is a lot like, if you guys have ever heard of Faces of Schlock, that was the anthology that I was part of a few years ago that was alternative cinema, pop cinema, put that out. And that was kind of the way that we did that one. We each person was responsible for their own movie, and then Henrik was the one that had to do the wraps and put the whole thing together. So that was a little bit more of a similar experience.
And I wanted to get each one of you, what film, I know we talked about inspirations earlier, and you mentioned Evil Dead in there as well as being a big inspiration for your films, but if there was one film besides Evil Dead you would say that really kind of made you look at it and go, this is what I want to do. I really want to make one of these. Do you have one in particular that really just sparked you? Glenn, why don't you go first?
Come back to me. I got to think.
Okay.
Sure. I've been drinking a lot tonight.
All that water. Andrew, what about you? Is there one particular film besides Evil Dead that you would say maybe sparked that idea of wanting to make them?
I might have to give the Robert Altman answer. I don't remember the name of the movies that inspired me to actually go out and do it, because they were so horrible that I just watched them and I was like, I know I can do better than that.
John, what about you, sir?
I'm going to put a little spin on this question.
Okay.
And go more recently, a film that I saw in doing the festival circuit that was kind of like a reminder of why I'm doing it, and it's still very inspiring to me, and I will jerk his dick any day of the week, but Danny Del Purgatorio's Other.
Yes.
It was that film still to this day, like, I've probably seen it 25 times, and I'm still amazed at what a group of friends produced, an insanely talented group of friends, but that just was like a whole new inspiration to me. And just getting to know them, too, and know how awesome of individuals they are, that just, to this day, still inspires me. And so that's my answer.
And Derek, what about you, sir?
That was a really good answer. Other is an amazing movie. And if you haven't watched Other, please go find Danny Del Purgatorio and Vitamin Pictures online. Okay, I'm going to be a chilling machine tonight. Can you tell I'm getting ready for a convention?
You can watch the whole film on the website, other-themovie.com. Just
there we go. We're going to be in full shill mode tonight. Can you tell I'm about to go to a convention? So the film, I kind of already talked about this on an episode of Astro Radio Z about a month ago or so. The film that kind of really sparked the interest for me was George Romero's Martin. And more specifically, George Romero's documentary, The Document of the Dead, where a section of it detailed George Romero's editorial process on Martin, and they highlighted the very beginning scene of Martin, and that just blew my mind, because I had no concept of what editorial was or what went into filmmaking beyond these amazing actors and these outlandish things that were happening before me. I never really took that step back before, and when that happened, It kind of broke the entire thing for me, and I wanted to learn as much as I could about it, and try and do it myself.
Cool. Yeah, I will say Other is a very powerful short. Martin, a good film as well. Definitely some inspirations there. You can see them. I can see that. For me, I haven't made one yet, but I am inspired to make one. As not only from the work from you guys, what you guys have done, and the other shorts I've seen, but I hope to one day make one soon, within the next year. And I'd say that what's been inspiring me, besides seeing the work from everyone in this room, is I still go back to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, personally, for me. And I look at that film, at what they did back then, before you had all this equipment available to you readily, and the film that they put together on, you know, a low budget with very limited resources, that really keeps me going and thinking, yeah, I could do something like that. So speaking of equipment that's available, I think the indie scene has exploded a little bit, and you guys definitely on the front line, especially John Pata, and probably Andrew as well for your festivals. Would you say that the readily available equipment now that you have that can give your film a professional look is a double-edged sword, because now it's more available for people to make their own films, but at the same time, you have a lot more out there? Would you say that it's a double-edged sword in that respect? Why don't you go first, Derek?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking to those two guys. Okay. Well, I think it's a double-edged sword. I'm not going to go into my thoughts on why I feel this way right now, but I think it is, to a certain extent. I think it's amazing that it allows people from all kind of stratas of social class to be able to go and tell stories and express themselves in art. I think that's really cool, but it does also open the door and kind of flood the market with a lot of subpar content, where back in the day when it was just on film, you kind of had to know shit in order to actually use it and actually produce it to a certain extent. So you kind of had to really think through, because that film cost money. And to just run it and just film anything, you kind of had to have a budget in order to do so. Where now you just have to have a camera, you plug in an SD card and just shoot away and just dump it, you know? I even though I said that, I still find it's awesome and amazing and very creatively freeing to have all of these awesome tools in front of you, to be able to create whatever you wanted on very tiny, almost zero budgets. So it's cool. It is a double-edged sword, though, mm-hmm. because there are the people that know how to do their stuff and make some really great stuff out of nothing, and then there's an awful lot of stuff that, oh, my gosh.
Speaking of oh my gosh, John, you had a large volume this year submitted to the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival. Is that true evidence that this technology that's available is a double-edged sword? Would you agree with Derek?
Yeah, I think I agree wholeheartedly with everything that Derek said. He hit it right on the head. In terms of just like looking at it from a festival's perspective, I think not only is it the equipment that is available, but the sites that help festivals. Like, for example, we use Film Freeway, which is a new website that I use as a filmmaker and a festival organizer. And it's kind of like a database for film festivals, where you can just submit to a whole bunch of them with a click of a button, and you can receive a bunch of submissions. And that is what is solely responsible for the increase of volume of submissions for the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival. And in doing so, yes, I saw that whole gamut that Derek was talking about, people that knew what they were doing and had a camera, and there were people that were just trying stuff out because they had a camera. And it is really awesome to see, but like Derek said, I mean, it's just, in a way, it's too much. Mm-hmm. And almost good of it, we can do about it. That's just kind of like a byproduct of it. So long answer put short, yes, double-edged sword.
Glenn, what about you? Now, you've been able to take advantage of this technology that we have available, but would you say, because you've also watched films for review Is it a double-edged sword? Do we have just as much crap as we do have gems, or more crap than gems out there because of this?
I think you end up with more crap. Mm-hmm. But I think you also end up with more gems. Because you have people who have this great idea who 20 years ago would have had no way to get that out there unless they attacks of how to get the stuff done. Or, you know, really, really had that drive to track all this shit down. Not everyone can pull off, you know, what Rodriguez did when he met El Mariachi, or what Raimi and crew did with Evil Dead. Not everyone has that already in them, but they might have that great idea where with a freaking, you know, $200 camera and some, you know, lamps, they can do their little movie. Mm-hmm. And with the computers, with the editing software, it's pretty easy to throw a lot of that stuff together, and you can get some gems. Now, I mean, some of them are going to be absolutely off, because it's kind of like the opinion of, it's, I'm going to use the attitude of American tourists, is that as the price of travel has gone down, any moron can buy a plane ticket and go to Europe. But that doesn't make Europe any worse. It just means right. that there's more shit, but you get some more good out of it, too.
Sure. Nice. Anything to add, Andrew?
Yeah, man. I mean, I kind of miss the early days of micro-budget and micro-cinema where, you know, everybody was just shooting their movies on any camera that they could get a hold of. And just, like, there was a lot of garbage, but they were trying really hard to, like, make the movie great despite knowing that their visual quality wasn't going to be that great. And I think that there's a huge degree of laziness now that everything shoots 24 frames per second and DSLR is so cheap. You have cameras that really get a great looking image on their own. And so these people, like, there's just this culture of gearhead has arisen, and they all are talking about cameras and mics and lights and all their crap that they're using to make the movies with. And the question is not what is your movie about, but what did you shoot it on? Like, I give a fuck about that. And the submissions reflect that, because you're looking at movies going like, well, this looks really professional. This looks like it could be on HBO, but it sucks. But it sucks. But it sucks. It's boring. It's the junior mint version of what's on at Hollywood is making. And so they're still got the same low budgets, the same actors that are terrible, and the same like plots that are ripped off of stuff, and the same like boring crap idea. And you're going like, wait, you're the independent. We're looking to you to be the innovators. We're looking to you to do shit that Hollywood would never do. Why does your movie look so polished? Why is your effort on making it look like so great? And then there are these festivals who are like, looks like a professional movie. We'll take it. We're not just putting some crap on the screen. It's like, whoa, crap is good sometimes. Crap might be original. Crap might not look great. Texas Chainsaw Massacre doesn't look HD and slick and Lifetime movie of the week, but is it awesome? Yeah.
Well said there, sir.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, and Andrew's a big fan of old shot-on-video films as well, and I think the reason why those films have endured and the culture of fans, the younger fans that have come back to revisit these films, Tim Ritter films, like Drew Dare, Critical Mass, and stuff like this, and why these have actually had a resurgence as of late is because there was passion behind these films. They may have had really good actors, may have looked like your grandma had shot them, but there was such passion behind them, and there was like a low-budget charm and charisma to everything that had happened, because these people genuinely had something they wanted to make. Where now, yeah, I think Andrew really hit it on the head. That's the vast majority of the stuff either try too hard to be a Hollywood film and has zero ideas, or just thinks, well, at least I come from the perspective of a horror, independent horror, where if you get somebody naked and just throw some blood on them, I guess that's a movie now. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know where I'm going. I kind of lost my train of
thought. Yeah, it's okay.
No, we get it, man. I mean, there's the focus is not on originality and audacity. It's on, like, getting a foothold in the industry and showing that you could be just like these guys because look at what my camera can do. And, like, you're totally missing the point. Horror is just not about that. It's about smashing the rules and, you know, really, like, upsetting people and hitting those little buttons. That's what your focus should be on. Do you understand suspense? Do you understand how to scare people? Do you understand structure? Do you understand plot? Do you understand anti-plot? Do you understand why the movies that you love work so well on audiences, and do you understand why those audiences have seen that and therefore will not accept that now from you?
And I agree, actually, that was going to be one of the points I was going to ask is, do you feel that even with this good technology, people are more focused on just making a film that they think is going to get distribution versus telling a story that pushes the limits? Do you think there's more indie filmmakers out there doing that, to where they're just trying to make something that they think is going to be marketable? Any one of you can answer that. Go for it. do you think that's out there? I mean, I've seen a number of screeners that are like that, where they look really good, but they were boring. John, would you say that seems to be a little more of the focus lately? I mean, you've been to a lot of festivals and stuff recently, so.
I would say maybe not so much the mainstream, but mm-hmm. that people are trying to make films in the way of the 80 films that we love. Like, everyone's trying to do these throwback films or these campy films. And I almost feel like what they don't understand is that those films weren't intended to be campy. Those were serious passion projects. And due to whatever it might have been, the time, their budget, the quality of their actors, or whatever it might have been, now we look back at them and we do see this camp level to it. But those were genuine projects. Now you have people trying to make these camp films, and it's not genuine. They're just mm-hmm. they're just trying to reproduce what they love and what we've seen, and it falls kind of flat for me. It doesn't have the same heart, and kind of just like we're talking about, if you have a $50 camera and you put your heart and blood, sweat, and tears into a film, no matter what the quality of the product is, you can tell. Mm-hmm. But if you have $500,000 and you're just like, oh, we're going to make this film because we love this stuff growing up, now you're just – it's bland. It doesn't mm-hmm. have a pulse to it. Right. So yeah. I don't know if filmmakers are necessarily going for like what's going to sell as much as just what they think is genuine, but they actually don't know what that truly is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think what's lacking in a lot of them is that passion. I watch a low budget movie. I can tell if they were really passionate about what they did. I mean, especially like some of the really really low budget stuff. I'm gonna bring up one that I saw at Oshkosh Horror a few years ago. Green Goo.
Mm-hmm.
Just this little one done by a bunch of teenagers. And I mean, if you look at it quality wise of sound and video, it's awful. But it's a fun little movie. And you can tell the people who were doing it were, like, having fun. And they were enjoying what they were doing. And they had, I mean, they weren't setting out to make, some serious project. But still, you could see that they cared about what they were doing to an extent. And they were enjoying what they were doing. And I think some people just, because it's so easy to do stuff now, they just throw it out there. And it's that passion is lacking, I think, from a lot of people. Because they're just, oh, I can just... As Derek said, I got a girl who'll take her top off. Boom. Done.
And I think we could blame, as much as I enjoyed the two films, I think we can really blame good old Quentin Tarantino's and Robert Rodriguez's Grindhouse for, I think, some of the trends that we see now in the indie films, where you said where they're trying to throw back to the 80s, because... you have these big-name directors who did this type of film, though, never mind, they still shot it on a huge budget. I would have personally liked to see Planet Terror and Death Proof shot on maybe $20,000 versus whatever budget they had. But would you say that that was kind of a, not turning point, but those two films really had an influence on what people thought indie films and exploitation films should be?
It very much did. I think low-budget exploitation films changed drastically right after that they were made. I mean, without those films, would we have Hobo with a Shotgun? Would we have, I mean, even more recently, would we have Time to Kill? I mean, there are so many films that have come out that ape that style that you can't not say that it had a far-reaching influence
on the underground exploitation scene.
Now, was that influence a good or bad thing, would you say, Andrew, the influence that Robert Rodriguez and Quentin's Grindhouse had?
I love the attention that it brought to the real thing, and mm-hmm. that's always what I love about when remakes are done or sequels are done. The light gets shined on back on the original material no matter what. You know, and Grindhouse as a movie is not going to be one that's going to be watched as much as people. You know, like you started to see like those compilations of trailers come out and stuff like that. You know, and there was just suddenly this interest in Grindhouse movies, and it just so a lot of stuff that had gotten that was just forgotten or didn't get a good release all of a sudden was like Blu-rays were coming out. And film festivals were happening. Directors were suddenly important that had just fallen into obscurity. So I think it's long-reaching legacy for me as a film fan is going to be the positive impact it had with drawing attention to a style that was very obscure and bringing it more to the mainstream audiences. Because it's not like those movies didn't have appeal to a lot of other people, but they didn't even know they existed. So I think for the crappy stuff that it did, you know, making everybody put fake grain on their movies and all of that, that's really just play and messing with something, and it's not going to last. I think it had more good than bad influence, I would say, in terms of film culture in general.
John, did you have anything to add about those two films and their impact at all? Or, I mean, you watched many films, so you could see it. Did it? Is that trend still going now, long after those two films have come out?
Yeah, absolutely. I can think of at least 10 films that we watched for submissions this year that I would say follow the Rodriguez-Tarantino Grindhouse formula.
Mm-hmm.
They have the look, they have the characters, they have the poster artwork, all of that. So, like, Grindhouse came out in 2007, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
So, yeah. So here we are 7 years later, and we're still seeing those films. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I think it did have a huge impact, and we're still kind of feeling it.
What's weird is that movie was a flop. Why would everyone want to copy something that didn't make any money?
So yeah, it was a damn fun movie, that's why.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I loved it. I saw it three times. I sat through that whole thing three times. I'm just saying.
It was a box office flop, but it wasn't for fans. You know, think, like, I mean, how many of us went to the theater and fucking lost our minds and had a blast with it? You know, like.
I loved it. It's just weird to me how, like, what distributor would go like, oh, yeah, Grindhouse, right.
Yeah. Right.
Vanishing what? Vanishing Point?
Well, that and the fake trailers, too, they helped spawn a full movie of Machete, which...
Two full movies.
Three, which will be three soon.
Yes.
Are they actually making the third one?
I've heard they're making the third one.
Unfortunately, yes.
They could have stopped at one with that. I think.
And you guys, Machete Kills was got the movie.
What? Oh, dude.
Goddamn fun.
No, I want him to make three because my favorite part of part two was that ending with the space stuff. I'm like,
yes.
Yeah, okay. Oh, I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the space part of that. So, Glenn, I'm going to ask you, let's take a look at indie film directors, and I think maybe I may have asked this before in another show, but would you say that, say, our big-name directors like who have gone on to do the big-budget films, the Sam Raimis, the James Gunn, the Ty West and that, Ty West is still doing a little lower budget, but Peter Jackson, do you think those guys could still make a good, memorable film with the budgets that their original films had, say, 10 grand if you gave it to them? Do you think they'd still be able to make films like that?
James Gunn could.
Mm-hmm.
I think James Gunn could
make one on any budget you give him. That guy is so insanely talented. He just, now, why would he ever go back?
Right.
There's no reason for him to go back because his ambitions are much higher than that. But that's one guy that you give him any bit, and that guy's going to make a solid product, at least in my mind.
Except for the Hobbit movies.
Except for the Hobbit films. John or Andrew, would you say that those directors could still make films besides James Gunn, or would you say James Gunn's probably the guy who would be able to go back and be the only one to make it on a really low budget?
I almost feel like their passion for it's got to be gone. You know, now it's become business, and I don't know if they would have the fun. I think that's the reason that those early films work so well, is not only did they have talent, but they were having fun. And I don't know. I mean, I don't need to go on a huge Raimi tyrant right now, but I don't know. I cannot picture Raimi sitting there and making The Evil Dead all over again.
Well, I mean, I would defer to the a lot of the press stuff that Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell did when they did Evil Dead a couple of years ago. They were just like, yeah, we paid our time in the trenches washing out our scleral lenses and coffee. It's time for some other kids to have to go through it. You know, it's like but I'd have to say that I like Drag Me to Hell a lot, and that was kind of Sam's sort of like dipping his toe back in horror just to get back to what he did. Just out, and that movie to me is wonderful. Like I'm not one of the people that disliked it. I really thought it was really fun, and I was like, well, hell, there he is. You know, because like before that, it was just the Dr. Octopus sequence in Spider-Man 2 that felt like an Evil Dead movie. His other stuff kind of didn't. He was never a horror filmmaker really to begin with. He just made them because that was the genre he could get it, you know, to step into. But I feel like he's one of the only ones that kind of went back just to be like, hey, see, I'm all right, man. I feel like Drag Me to Hell was about as close as we'll see to something like that.
Now, speaking of those lower budget films, you've all made it, and I think the general public has kind of a misimpression of indie films. They think they're all just Human Centipede or all just, you know, some kind of Saw film. What would you say, if someone came to you and asked you to describe an indie film, what makes a good micro-budget independent film, what would you say to them? Let's start with John. What would you say to them?
What makes a good indie film?
Yeah.
Someone wanting to tell the story they believe in no matter what they have in front of them. You know, when I think of a good independent film, I think about people that did not succumb to their shortages, what they didn't have. They persevered through it, and they told a genuine and pure story. So,
Derek, what would you say to them? Same thing. If someone came to you and asked you what makes a decent micro budget indie film besides blood and boobs?
The backbone to do things that a bigger film wouldn't do. Because you have no one else to answer to, why would you not go for it and try things that probably would never fly past executive or a board of financiers? If you're funding these movies on your own, take risks. Go for it. If your film isn't marketable to distributors who, one, don't give money anymore for your films, and two, more than likely, when they do take your films, they'll put them in some catalog where you're probably buried and your film may come out within years. Why don't you take the chance of self-distribution? It's at your hands. And telling the story exactly how you want to tell it. So a good indie film, to me, breaks rules, it does things on its own terms, and it tells the story that the director wants to tell without succumbing to having to bow to anybody's wishes or will.
Glenn, what about you? Anything to add to what John and Derek said? What would be a good indie film, micro-budget?
A lot of it for me comes down to the story that they tell. I generally, when I go back and I look at the indie films I've watched, the ones that I've really enjoyed are ones that, it's not necessarily wholly unique stories, but it's not just it's a lower budget, you know, lower budget copy of something from 1986 or a lower budget copy of something Hollywood did. It's not, you know, they're not just doing we're going to do the $100 version of Paranormal Activity. I want to see something where it's a little different, where someone takes things a little different way. And I want to see that passion from you know, that I think shines through. I want to see that the people who made the movie believed in what they were doing, and that they believe what they're doing, knowing that they're never going to see a fucking penny for this stuff, right. But they're still out there doing it because they want to tell that story. They've got this idea and they want to go, here, this is my idea. Pet it. Look at it. Play with it. Have fun. That and anal fissures. That makes it good.
Damn chair.
Those damn anal fissures, man. Andrew, what about you, sir? Someone came up to you and said, what makes a good micro-budget indie film? Anything to add what hasn't already been said?
I agree with everybody, but I just, I would say that there's a degree of safety that you do not get with an independent. And I actually, I call myself underground filmmaker rather than an indie because I'm not part of even any sort of I'm not part of any sort of industry at all, and I have no aspirations to be part of any sort of industry, and I have no desire to move up any sort of ladder. We're kind of self-contained and kind of the most dangerous kind of art that there is because there are certain questions that even an independent has to ask itself that we don't. We don't have to go, who's going to want to watch this? We don't have to go, how are we going to make our money back? We don't have to go, what kind of distributors might be a good fit for us? We don't have to go, like, what kind of what are some actors that might be willing to do this stuff? You know, some name people, whatever. Who can we get attached to it? We don't have to ask ourselves any of that stuff. So we are making movies for no one, and that means all bets are off. We don't have to go, does this make sense? We don't have to go, what genre is this? We don't have to ask ourselves any of that stuff. All we have to do is, man, what kind of freaky stuff are we going to come up with to do today? And that's why I think it's the most exciting, is because, like, here's the thing. When I was younger, in the early 90s, horror movies were squeaky clean, and there was a lot of censorship involved, and it's a lot of the stuff that we were seeing come out in the theaters and video was just really heavily gutted because of the 80s and all the scare about splatter and all that stuff. So the heyday was gone. But something that was happening with music was what they called it alternative stuff. And people were like, what does alternative mean? I was like, well, that means look up the word in the dictionary. It just means something different that you're not going to get over there. If I was making movies full of boobs and blood, that's what Hollywood's doing now. The censorship is gone. They can tear off every limb. They can show every naked gutted thing, man. Hostel 2, you know what I'm saying? Like Saw. It's over. Gore is over for the independent. It's, you know, all that nudity, it's over. It's over. And we used to be the ones that were showing it. Trauma, that was where you used to go to get the extreme. Bad Taste, you know what I'm saying? It's over. It's done. What can you do now to freak out the people that are seeing all this violence in video games and mainstream movies? What can you do to get under their skin, flip them out? The only answer is, what freaks you out? You horror fan who have seen all this crazy crap, you horror fan who have seen Guinea Pig and who've seen Serbian film, like, what is it that really bothers you? If you can hit on that and make that into a movie, chances are it's going to bother somebody else, and then you've nailed it.
And would you say today's culture, because of everything that's gone on in the last, say, 15 years, has that made it more difficult to come up with a decent scare? Because that's what you're kind of saying, I think, Andrew, is that, like you said, the censorship's off. You've got the extreme, not only in video games, but in media and everything. Does that make it harder to make a good horror film, do you think?
Not necessarily, no, because, I mean, like, you know, it makes it easier to want to copy what's already been done, because you want to be like your heroes and make, I'm going to make my Texas Chainsaw. Here's something that people enjoy. I'm going to make something like that. The thing is, you know what Creepypasta is, right? Creepypasta is a YouTube channel that's just audio stories only.
Oh, okay.
It gets thousands and thousands of hits from people, and those little short stories are horrifying and disturbing because the same basic stuff that scares us will always scare us. And look, I'm serious. Creepypasta has a huge following. A lot of people really dig it. And it's just because the basic ass EC Comics Twilight Zone stuff, if you do that, man, if you do that right, it don't matter how many heads come off, it doesn't matter how many different ways you know, we're stuck on this how can we kill people thing. We're still stuck on that. You know? Mm-hmm. Like how many different ways can we take the body apart? Blah, blah, blah. It's not scary. It's not scary. For a minute, you're like, oh, I can't look. But is that going to have any staying power? Think about the shit that you really remember. Just get, you know, you got to get in touch with the most, you know, don't get too complicated. They're overly concerned with technical stuff, and they're overly concerned with making the big impact. Like, I want to be the new most hardcore thing you ever saw, man. I'm going to be hardcore. Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I might not be the average horror fan, you know, the tatted up Pierce guy who folds his arms like he's in the back of a rock club and just judges the thing because he can't do it himself. I might not be like the typical horror fan, but I just think of, you know, real basic things still scare me. So I think it's not hard to come up with that stuff. It's harder just to pry yourself away from this idea that you got to be the most hardcore thing or the throwback to the thing that you like. That's what you got to like shoehorn out of you. That's the biggest obstacle that they face, is like looking good and being like other things. You shouldn't do that. You're, as an individual, already are really unique. So just like Derek said, man, just tell your story, because with the independence, the most direct line from the artist to the art, you know, it's the most uninterrupted straight line. So with that regard, no two should ever be alike.
And with the opportunities that are out there now, talk a little bit about possibly, you know, where we see some things going for the independent scene. Would you say with the availability now of, say, Vimeo and some of these other outlets, that we might see some more films that, one, either didn't see the light of day because they got lost in the film festival scene, or just films that in general people might be making that they're not too worried about distribution because they can do it themselves? Do you see even more indie filmmakers doing the do-it-yourself distribution in the future, or you think they're going to be out there still trying to make a material to get on the DVD and Blu-ray? John, what would you say?
It's hard to say, because I think a good portion of it falls down to the fans, to the viewers as well, because I think there is... You know, like before, when you would say that you were an independent filmmaker, people didn't really know what that meant. And I feel like now, if you say, like, oh, I'm an independent filmmaker, well, where can I see your film? You know, is it in Redbox? No. Oh, okay. You know, they don't think that you're real. But if you go the way of, like, doing your own VOD, it's a matter of getting people to actually go check that out, because they would, if you say like, oh, we have it up on Vimeo, it's like Vimeo VOD. To some people, that's not creditable. Mm-hmm. And so I think if people start realizing good films exist, and it doesn't matter if they're in Redbox, if they're on HBO, if they're at your multiplex, or if they're on Vimeo, if they're on YouTube or whatever, I think if people will give in and understand that, then yes, there is a good chance that we'll see more people going to the VOD, to kind of like releasing it yourselves. But if no one's really going for that, I don't know. Are we going to see people? I'm kind of curious to know what Derek thinks, because Hole in the Wall is going up on VOD, yourself VOD. And what do you think, Derek, like to pull people to go check that up? Do you think it's going to be an easier task than having them, you know, pick it up at a convention or try to go see a screening?
I think it's becoming easier now, because our set-top TVs are now accommodating these different avenues. Vimeo can now be found on all Samsung TVs. It can be found on Roku boxes. And it'll more than likely in the near future be on like a PlayStation 4. I think it's on the Xbox One. I don't know. I don't have one. I thought I had heard it was on there as well. So the reason why I decided to go that route was because I had seen that, you know, it's starting to proliferate on these different items, which can be viewed on a normal television. I think that changes the game in the playing field tremendously. Now, Andrew can also speak to this, because he also has things up on Amazon.com on their instant service as well, which is another avenue that hopefully I can have Hole in the Wall in as well, because Amazon, just like Netflix now, is pretty ubiquitous with all different, you know, devices. All smart TVs basically come with it now. So I think when people start realizing these things are actually on their TV already, they just have to open their TV and turn it on, I think these avenues will be much more legitimate. And I think the idea of having to use a third party to house to be able to put these things on these different avenues, like Vimeo or Amazon, I think that'll start to go away, or at least to the people that understand that all those other people are doing are taking a cut of that money you could potentially make as an independent filmmaker. Now, obviously, filmmaking is 100% making money, but it is to an extent because it costs money in order to produce things. So Vimeo, for my money right now, even though there is a yearly fee to it, they take a very small percentage of the money that is brought in by the rental or purchase of these films. You just have, there's a slight bit of worry with doing it through them if you open it up for purchase on these sites, because then it's that much easier for the pirates to be able to just take your movie and start throwing it out there, and then you'll never see any money off of it. Right. But honestly, I think the smart micro-budget filmmaker will start to try and do things themselves and then take marketing into their own hands. They have it all before them. They have social media. They have websites. They have conventions that they can go to. Yes, these things cost money, but they can do it themselves. They have podcasts, like your podcast. Anyone with a microphone and a computer can do a podcast and get their word out there. I mean, the time is now for independent filmmakers to take distribution in their own hands and do it themselves instead of relying on, and not all distribution houses are like this, but a good percentage are leeches that will take your film and you'll never see a single red set off of it and may bury your film. And your film will be gone for 7 years or longer, and you'll never get that contract back. So I think, yes, I think the time is now. It's been here for a little while, but I think it's becoming even more. We have to take advantage of this time right now before the studios squash it completely to get in and start self-distributing your work. The power is in the hands of independent filmmakers now.
Andrew, anything to add to what Derek said? You have some of yours out on Amazon.
Yeah.
And self-distribution. Do you see more of that happening?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's like, I remember 10 years ago, before YouTube, trying to put one of our films online so people could see it was a bitch, man. I mean, it really was, because we didn't have no money, so we're like, we split our film into a couple of Windows movie files and let people download that off our site, and then the site was a free server like Tripod or something, or one of those, so it would shut down for an hour because too many people were downloading it. Nobody was doing it yet, so it was really hard. And I think stuff like YouTube is so great because you can make your stuff and the world could see it instantly. It's just so cool. And like, I make a lot of money off the Amazon. I mean, I'll just say it. The Amazon Instant Video, I mean, those checks are good. They're part of what keeps Gonzerific going, because DVD sales are cool, and they are kind of picking up because people, there's now a new physical media thing. But what's crazy is a lot of my old stuff that I just put on YouTube because I didn't want to carry the catalog anymore because it wasn't selling, people are now emailing going, can I get a DVD of that? They want a copy. They want like a real thing. So it's starting to kind of shift back around. But the main thing is just like, put it where people could find it.
Right.
If you're making movies, people could see them. The biggest thing that frustrates me about people that make movies is that they hold onto it like this little gold nugget they got. Like, oh no, I'm gonna wait till I have this great deal. Like, no, actually, no. The times my movies have been professionally distributed are the only times they've been pirated. And what'll happen is it'll end up on Cinemageddon. It'll end up on YouTube anyway. And the big difference there was I didn't see a penny for any of those movies that I made for those. So the stuff I'm making money off of is the stuff I have 100% control of. You know. And Amazon right now, like Derek said, it's in this golden time that's I can only compare to the early days of home video, where people were just like, yeah, we'll take whatever, man. Come on, bring it into the store. And people were like, oh, you're all right. What is this? I've never heard of it. I'm going to try it out. Whether or not they like it, whether or not they have any respect for a micro-budget movie, it doesn't matter if you're on Netflix or what, because you're sitting there right beside like Captain America and stuff like that, and people see it and go like, whoa, this isn't quality. This looks like some people made it in their garage. I'm like, exactly. Some people did make it in their garage, and that's awesome. And it's not they, but that same person would be like, I spit on your grave. You start watching it. Oh, God, this looks like some old newsreel. Like, exactly, exactly. You know, maybe this isn't for you, but, you know, fuck off. There's people that want authenticity, and there's a big kind of push toward that. That's why, like, reality TV was so big and took over regular TV, because people want to see, like, real shit. Even if it's fake, doesn't matter. You know, they like to do that. But, you know, vinyl came back, VHS come back, cassette tape is coming back. There's a whole documentary about the resurgence of audio cassette tapes. People want, like, real stuff, and there's more ways to get it out now than ever before. It's a really awesome time. And like I said, yeah, Amazon, I get paid off Amazon, man. I really do. It's easy as hell. And all you got to do is meet some technical requirements and, you know, play by their rules. But as far as content goes, I mean, I have had no pushback from them, and I got nothing but money from them.
Nice. Glenn, anything to add?
That's covered a lot of the bases, man. So I mean, I'm still working on getting my stuff seen. I've got a I had with my first short I did, I kind of threw it out there and then just said, all right, it's out there.
That's a good way to do it, though, Glenn.
Yeah, but then I didn't do anything else about it. I told people right. Once it's out there.
Well, you'd be surprised, I think, sometimes when you kind of just put something out there, it can find a life of its own. Now, here's an example. And this weekend, I'm going to a certain convention, which I'm not going to plug, because Mr. John Pata will give me shit for the rest of the night.
What? But... You're going to this little wasteland, dude.
but the first film that I had an active part in... finding distribution and figuring out what I was going to do with was a film called Swamp Head. And we initially decided, based upon going to conventions, I was going to conventions with Jason Paul Collum for a documentary we had made, Screaming in High Heels. Seeing the resurgence of VHS sparked an idea in my head to, let's first sell a small limited run of VHS and then see what if people, one, will actually buy them, and two, see what happens. That VHS was almost exclusively, barring maybe 10 copies that got sent out around the world, were mostly exclusively sold in Wisconsin. Those tapes now are literally worldwide. They have been redistributed. The initial 50 tapes that we had made here in Wisconsin in my basement, I did by hand, are on VHS collectors' boards all the fucking time. It shocked me how much, and these people were everywhere. So I think if you have a product that people want, and you put it out there, it'll find a life of its own. I mean, Swamp Head got picked up for distribution based on those tapes. Based on those 50 tapes, they found Briarwood Entertainment. Those boys started like a mini little cult based around it, where they played the movie parties, and more people wanted it. They contacted me, they picked it up, and now this month, in like 2 weeks, it's going to be out for national distribution through Wild Eye Entertainment. Based on 50 VHS tapes that I made in my fucking basement.
Sure.
So I think, as I said before, the power is in your hand to get your film out there. It's a matter of marketing that film and not just saying, well, nobody's going to want to see my film. You got to put forth the effort to be able to actually, you know, get it out there and get the word out there. And I think, Glenn, especially with Hell and your ones, you make fun movies. I think it's just a matter of you got to push those babies out there, man.
Yeah, That's what I was saying. I gotta do more to put it out there for people to see it. Because I mean, hell, who's just gonna stumble on that on YouTube?
You gotta spam it. Sometimes you gotta.
That's what I mean. I gotta do more of that. I talk a big game among my friends, but when it comes to talking to myself amongst people I don't know, I have a harder time doing that.
Well, and I was very, like, I was super modest about what I was doing for a very long time, too. I was like, look, I'm learning, man. These are experiments. I'm nobody. They're not the greatest thing or whatever. We're just kind of having fun. I didn't even want to call myself a filmmaker. I was very low-key about the whole thing. I didn't want to shoot my mouth off for none of that stuff, and I still don't. And I can't believe it when people are buying stuff. I can't believe it when the checks come in. I can't believe it when I signed somebody's movie. I can't believe it when someone asked me for advice. It's still like, you know, what's wrong with you, man? What I mean, me and my friends have fun doing this stuff, but what's your problem? You know, go make your own movie. Like I don't want to sell myself to anyone. Like I don't. It was pulling teeth to get me to make DVDs. It was pulling teeth to get me to open an online store. And you know, but eventually I just realized like. People really want this stuff. It's important to them. They love that little indie thing that their friends haven't heard of. They want to be the guy to be like, dude, man, have you heard of fucking Glenn Benner? Holy shit. And they're like, oh, yeah, I totally have heard of him. Right? You know, that's
heard of him before he was cool.
Exactly. Yeah. That's always going to be a thing in the age of the internet where everything is like Google away. If you found something that somebody else didn't first, you're the shit for that moment, you know? So I think don't underestimate that kind of stuff and just stay cool and don't be like, my movie's the best thing ever and be a big asshole, because then people are like, actually, no, this isn't the best ever. And
I reviewed a film by that guy.
Yeah. Right.
So you know, man, just... That. Just, it's, you know, stay yourself and do it the way you want to do it. That's the thing. There's so many avenues for you to do that with, and so many ways for you to go about, you know, like getting yourself out there. You don't have to change necessarily like your whole thing of who you are. Glenn, I think you're really, really funny. I think you're a cool guy, and I think people will definitely dig you. And you know, it's okay to associate you with the style too. A lot of times I wanted all the women in my movies to be the big stars and I didn't want to take any credit, you know. After a while I just had to accept the fact that sometimes directors can be, you know, stars and stuff to people. It's weird, but it happens.
Yeah. Well, Social Network does make it easy, but also make more work for you to try to get it out there. I know just from my shows here with the Spoiler Room, and I mean, no films, but just with my movie reviews and that, I mean, it's weird, but it works, and you may feel uncomfortable spamming a number of groups that you belong to, but it does work, and that's what's really kind of scary about it, is as much as you may not like to talk about it, and self-promotion, I'm the first to admit, I'm horrible at self-promotion, but just getting it out to, say, half a dozen groups, if you get it to the right half a dozen Facebook groups, it'll take off from there on its own. But you do have to do a little bit of that work. But once you find that right group, that's all you need. Like Derek said, you know, with the VHS, you find just the right niche, and all of a sudden, boom, everybody's discovered it, and they want a copy of Hell. You know, so
yeah, it's true. And you know, horror—they're impossible to please the today's horror audience. But if they like you and respect you, the ones that do, if they like what you do, they're gonna like you forever. You know, mm-hmm. And you know, look at Chester Turner, right? I mean, that's one of the best examples I can think of. They love that guy, and look at the movie. You know, it's not high def. Right? It's you know, it's not blowing the doors off of stuff. It's just a unique thing that there's nothing else like it except for the Rotten Cotton movie that ripped it off. But it's more like if you've got that confidence in the uniqueness of what you have, that's also part of it too. You're just like, well, why should you listen to this? It's like, dude, there's nothing like it, you know?
Yeah, who knows? Your movie maybe 10, 20 years down the road, will your VHS will net $800+ on eBay, like Quadhead. For years, the Quadhead Zone literally was considered probably one of the worst films ever made. And now, It goes for $600+ on VHS on eBay.
Not saying that Hell is the worst film ever made, Glenn, but if that film can go for that, I think yours may in the future do as well. So I think we're going to wrap things up here, guys. This has been a fantastic discussion. I want to thank you all for joining us in the spoiler room tonight. Everything I hope for and more. And while I get on my knees here, let's start with Glenn. Why don't you plug your stuff and tell everyone where they can find your stuff, including your new shorts that you recently put out.
Okay. Before I plug myself, I just got to say, I respect the hell out of all you guys. I really, really do. I mean, it's not just what you've done. It's the community that is around the people who are doing this. And you guys are like my first into that community, especially like John and then Derek. It's that first glimpse I had into it. And it's awesome, man. Thanks. And Mark, guys like you who just have such an unwavering passion for everything that's put onto film and digital, everything. Guys like you, man. Because that's the thing.
Yes.
I can almost guarantee that I can never make something that Mark the Movie Man won't like.
even if I did know you, there's movies out there. Usually it's the bigger budget films.
Yes.
Actually, you bring
name
up a
point. Them, Mark. Name huh? them for me. I want to know what these movies are.
The big budget film?
There's no,
big
movies oh. that you
He didn't like the new Transformers.
I hated almost all the Transformers, okay? Actually, no, I hated all the Transformers. First one was the least hated out of all of them. Hated the G.I. Joe ones. Disliked the Devil Inside, the horrible found footage Devil Inside possession film. I've hated films. I hated one... I've hated a comedy film that I still get flack for hating, and that is... See, you got me on a defensive now.
I'm
thanks,
loving
Derek.
This right what now, Mark. I'm loving this. I'm loving this. Keep going, please.
I got flack for hating on the film from Tom Green, his film. Freddy Got Fingered. I totally disliked that, and I get hate comments to this day that I hated that film. So there are films I dislike. I admit that my passion sometimes... may make me a little soft on a few films, but Glenn brings up a good point. I was gonna.
But Mark, I in some ways I envy that about you because you can sit down and you can just fucking enjoy a movie, and I was like that when I was younger. But the more stuff I watch, the more I start to pick stuff apart, and it's gone from me enjoying things to I've got this scab and I got a fucking pick at it. And the next thing you know, my fucking arm is falling off.
Actually, I was going to close it up, and you brought up a great point real quick. I guess the last point we'll talk about for the night is community. Independent films, I've learned, too, through Oshkosh Horror Film Festival, helping Rich Peterson from the Bordello Horror doing the Madison Horror Film Festival and just getting to know you guys. There is a sense of community in the indie horror scene, but there also seems to be just as much drama at times as in a Hollywood scene. Would you say that there's kind of both in it? I mean, here in Wisconsin, it seems like I haven't met a douche filmmaker yet. So is Wisconsin unique, or would you say that films there is a sense of community around the world, if you will, of indie films, and that the stories of drama you hear are few and far between? I'm putting you guys out on the spot.
I would say, in my limited experience, and this isn't just a horror thing. It's the fact that when you find a good group of people, that douche person just isn't welcome. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much that he's just shunned. It's that he can tell that his attitude isn't welcome amongst them. I mean, you're still going to have people like that. Right. But I think it's going to cut down when you have a community that works together and looks out for each other and helps each other. You get some of that out. Now, I've been lucky where I haven't had that much drama around my stuff. The casting crews that I've worked with so far have been 100% drama-free. Mm-hmm. I mean, there hasn't been a single gripe or complaint or anyone trying to be a diva. It's all been... a collaborative effort. And I mean, I've heard from other directors of, well, don't work with this person. When I was looking for some actors and stuff like that, this person is nothing but trouble. And I've even heard that with some of the people that I have worked with on other things. And I'm like, well, I didn't experience that with them. But it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. So in my little experience, I don't see it much. But also, I, amongst the guys that are here, I have the least experience in that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know John has had some of that experience of the doing a festival drama that I do not envy at all.
And
even going with the crew, or like your cast or your crew, or the friends that you have, what you put out is what you're going to get in. And so, like Glenn, you're talking about, you heard that there are people you worked with that you were told not to. Well, how do you know that director wasn't a fucking asshole to them? And they were shown no respect, and so they didn't give any back. But if you, yeah. I mean, if you go into a set and you're a fucking egotistical maniac and a fucking dickbag, yeah, people are not going to go well with you. But when you're doing independent shit and you're all putting in 20-hour days and you're all doing it for no pay, but you're in the trenches with them and you're fighting, no matter if you're the actor, if you're the director, if you're the grip, if you're the audio dude, you're going to gain the respect of everyone that's around you. So if you're a good individual, and I know that's like a very cheesy thing to say, but if you, and I keep using the word genuine, but if you're genuine and pure, you're going to find yourself surrounded by those people. So when you have a group of people that are all getting along and we're hanging out and shit like that, and then some chotch comes in and wants to like throw their own dick and stuff like that, they're not going to make it. It's like they realize they are an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't remove them, they're going to remove themselves. Like, you don't have to. They're just going to realize, like, I do not fit in here. So, I mean, it happens. And just because, you know, Mark, like, you haven't seen it out of the people you've met in Wisconsin, doesn't mean that it's not in there. It's right. Just those people won't survive with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go and do their own douchey thing elsewhere.
I do have to revise. I worked on a short film.
Names, Glenn. Come on, name names. Let's get dirty.
Come on, man. The dirt.
How big a name is it? Rob Schraub.
He is going to name names.
did Robot Bastard. Well, it's my friend's brother, so it's not like I did anything to know the guy. I live with the dude's brother. But
this is awesome.
Did this little short, and there were the people that were there for like a month going in after their day jobs and spending 5-6 hours building sets and props and painting for 5 hours on just fucking blue walls for 5 hours, painting shit and painting tubes and gluing stuff to shit. And then when the first day of filming starts, we go from having the 6 people who've been working on shit for a month to 100 fuckers show up because everyone wants to be in it now. And the ones who've done shit leading up to it, they're the ones who are acting as if they've done something to deserve being in this because, well, I went to high school with you. It's like, so the fuck what? These guys here were building shit, and it, because of them, we're even at this stage. And I experienced some drama with that shit, with people where the guy who was director of photography, I forget who it was, one of the guys who was somehow involved in tech, who hadn't been there for any of the shit leading up to it, was just like, you people are all fucking nobodies. I've done stuff somewhere else. And it was like, yeah, whatever.
Andrew, what about you? Drama in the community. Have you had the unfortunate experience of seeing some of it?
Yeah, I have. And you know, the downside of any community is that, or any group activity, is people aren't going to always get along, and people are going to be in it for the different reasons or whatever. So I've experienced drama in the micro-budget community over the last decade of doing it, and I've also experienced drama, obviously, within the... Because, you know, Gonzorific, I try to keep it pretty insulated, try to keep my own little bubble of filmmakers and pocket of, you know, try and keep us all together and unified, but there's some really kind of heartbreaking stuff, and I made a mockumentary feature called Fake Blood, and it's on Amazon On Demand. You can actually watch it. And the kindest review I received of it was that it was basically like a Spinal Tap for micro-budget filmmakers. It just, I cobbled together every, at the time, which, you know, now it was 2007, I cobbled together every, like, bad thing that ever happened to me on set, every experience I ever had with actors, and even some stories that friends of mine went through, and I just, like, stuck it all together into this, made it this one story about a production gone horribly wrong. So that's how I dealt with that. But yeah, within the community, I mean, I'm a feminist, and that's what Wikipedia calls me, and I don't deny it at this point. And there's a lot of people who are angry at that because they feel like I'm discriminatory against men because all my movies are stories about women, and that the only film festival that I put together that wasn't Gonzerific was a Women in Horror Festival, and it was limited only to female directors. And, you know, there's still people that are pissed at me about that. But, you know, I feel as though it's a boys club that we've got mm-hmm. here. And it's, you know, the evidence is there. We're looking at four, you know, white dudes sitting here. And the fact is that there's a lot of women out there doing incredible work. And so I feel like I'm not knocking you for putting it together. It's cool. But I feel like, I really wanted to be like one of the people putting that out there because I'm in a position of privilege because of being like a white male in America. I mean, everything is open to me and nobody's going to discriminate against me. So I wanted to use that privilege to, you know what I'm saying, like kind of just give them a foothold and where they otherwise might not, and just a freedom to just, like, you know, and some unity amongst them. And yeah, there's people that really are pissed off about that. There are people that really, really don't like that.
In defense, I did invite a few female directors, but one of them is at a festival tonight. So I did try to get some female directors in here, Andrew.
I know you would, Mark. I'm just using an example.
Sure, Mark. I'm using that as an example.
Yeah, right there.
So yeah, there's people that have really mm-hmm. taken me apart over the years about that kind of stuff, and I had someone threatened to beat me up at a convention if they saw me, and then I saw him and he didn't even like come near my table, and I was like, yeah, you pussy, right? Whatever. Knowing full well, you know, that's they would never do anything. But yeah, it's that part mm-hmm. of it bad. But yeah, mm-hmm. Fake Blood was and I'll eventually, I'm sure, write a book about some of the kind of heartbreak that I've experienced and stuff mm-hmm. like that, because in the indie horror community, I think the hole left by the loss of Andy Kopp is still pretty immense. Mm-hmm. He was the biggest supporter of horror filmmakers on the indie level that I ever knew. And he would put on screenings of my movies in Ohio knowing that I wouldn't even be at them. And he would write reviews of my movies knowing that I might not even see it. And he just always was so supportive from day one. And he also made incredible movies. And when you watch Andy's films, I don't know if you guys have heard of Mutilation Man or Atrocity Circle or Black Sun or Quiet Nights of Blood and Pain.
They're sitting right back there, Andrew.
Right. Andy's just like, his movies were exactly what we were talking about telling your story. Andy's movies were like this, it was like this puke of his soul. It was like this exorcism, as he described it, on video. And seeing him at Cinema Wasteland was just always like, he was the warmest guy, but he made the most horrifying things. And I've never quite seen anything like him. And anybody who's interested in making movies that wants to know like the nuts and bolts of how a micro budget would come together, buy his movie Mutilation Man and listen to his commentary track on there. All your answers will be found there.
I'm Andrew Kopp. I had the experience. He was the first film that I reviewed on the very first Final Cut. And this was before I knew what I was talking about with indie films, and I panned the hell out of it. I admit it. I just didn't get it. But I gave points of why I didn't like it. I didn't just say it sucked, and I totally came out and admitted that I probably am missing what the director's trying to go for. 6 months later, I get an email from Andrew who asks if he wants to put my review on a limited VHS of Mutilation Man, and that was my first introduction really into the indie film scene, and made me realize what kind of people were out there in the indie film scene. Because I'm like, I emailed him back going, but I panned your movie. And he goes, no, man, you gave good points. I want to put it on the limited edition VHS. Yeah. And I'm like, holy shit. And then he's like, would you like to see, he's like, I got a whole catalog, and he sent me like 40% of his films. He sent them to me. He goes, yeah, if you review them, great. If not, that, you know, that's fine too. Here you go. And it blew my mind. It blew my mind that he took the time to feedback and, you know, explain some things and just talk to me. And that was my first taste of meeting a indie filmmaker and realizing what kind of culture it could be out there. And it made me want to see more. And then Glenn told me about the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival, which pretty much started it all then from there, where I got to meet everybody here. But, yeah, it just... He seemed like that type of guy, and it's a shame because he really has some really outrageous out there films that, again, like Derek said, are films that he was just telling a story. These aren't going to be films that are going to be marketed to everybody.
No, they're difficult things, but he's an example not only of how to do it, but how to be a guy in it too. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was the feeling I got with it as well. So sorry, that was just my little Andrew story there.
No, that's cool, because I did the graphic design. I did the layout for the VHS re-release of Mutilation Man, so we kind of worked together and didn't know. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I did the covers for both. There was two covers, and I did them.
Yeah, I've got one of them. Actually, he sent me one, a copy of, which, again, blew my mind as well. So it's on my shelf of indie films. So I think it's next to Screaming in High Heels. Actually, so
I love Screaming High Heels, and I wanted to say I love Swamp Head too. Derek knows that, but I love this movie,
brother. Derek, your final thoughts with the drama in the community. I know you've kind of experienced that. I guess every community has that. Would you say that you've experienced that firsthand?
I don't want to dwell on drama, because I think the people that create it will be forgotten, mm-hmm. and they'll weed themselves out. What I want to focus on is community. Mm-hmm. A new film we're about to release on Friday on VOD, Hole in the Wall, is 100% created and about community. It was originated by my experiences at John's film festival, the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival, and the people that I had met, and the intense friendships that I had created or had been created through each of us, not only just appreciating the fact there were others like us in the Wisconsin area, because the first original, what was it, John, two?
The first two, yeah, the first two.
Wisconsin based. So it wasn't from anywhere outside of the state. So to see that there was an actual community of filmmakers, regardless of budget level, of technical savvy, of anything, telling stories, and that these people were all extremely humble and personable, and making truly like unique and subversive work, really spoke to me a lot. And because of that film festival, for the years, we met many, many, many people. And my friend Corey Udler, who couldn't be here tonight, was other than, obviously, I had known John a little bit before we had done the film festival, but John and Corey are two people that I met that have had a significant impact on some of the work that I've done subsequently. I mean, I've worked on John's film, Deadweight. And Corey, we wanted to make a film. We wanted to make films together after having these friendships that lasted beyond that one day that film festival was. And it was amazing to me that, you know, instead of people having egos and wanting to one-up each other, which happens much more, I think, at a performance level than it does at the level of the creative, the director, the writer and director. I think there, in general, a lot of writers and directors, at least that I've come into contact, are usually people that understand what each other are going through and are usually much more receptive to wanting to bounce ideas off of. There's always the douche, there's always the douche, and there's always the motherfucker out there that's looking to just steal your shit and make a quick buck. But I think there's a lot of people out there that are genuine, humble people that know what you're going through because they go through the exact same thing. But we decided that Corey and I, through many conversations and through experiences we had doing conventions and doing film festivals, making films, that we genuinely love the people in the scene that had been created and that was emerging out of Wisconsin. And we wanted to make a film, and we wanted to actually make an entity that not only celebrated that, but unified those people together, and that was Wisconsin Horror, which you will see is before Swamphead, it's before Hole in the Wall, and I hope anyone that is in Wisconsin that makes horror films uses, it's not something that's just exclusive for me. It's for anybody that makes films, regardless of quality, regardless of level. It's a symbol of community. Is a tag that we have called Wisconsin Horror, because I think working together, you get a lot further than you do constantly trying to stab each other. Mm-hmm. And Hole in the Wall came something because we reached out all these people and said, hey, we want to make a film with you. Would you be interested in it? And it, like Andrew, we didn't want this to be a boys' club. We wanted female filmmakers. We only ended up getting one, Miss Carolyn Baker, whose piece in Hole in the Wall is fucking amazing.
Yes. the most disturbing piece, too, in fact.
Oh, I love that. I told you what I thought about that.
She is fucking rock and roll. I love Carolyn so much. She is amazing. And Corey and I, that was one thing we wanted to make sure, even if it was going to be just him and I and one other person, we wanted to make sure there was a female voice in our film. Because to just have boys playing with blood and boobs is just not interesting. It's not interesting. Anyways, Hole in the Wall, I know this is a long, rambling story, but our film, regardless of the fact that we wanted to make something that walked outside the lines and that subverted the normal status quo paradigm of what an exploitation or horror film was, we wanted this film to be about community. To be about, we are not ashamed that this is a Wisconsin-based film. That's why it's called a Wisconsin Horror Anthology. We wanted to show, regardless of people in California will just laugh at it and just go, oh, those, it's Wisconsin, those people don't fucking matter. Because we hear that all the time. I hear that all the time. You know, oh, you're a fucking dude from Wisconsin. You don't know your ass from a whole over. Try working in the commercial industry, making commercials or working in kind of ad agencies don't give a fuck. If you're from Wisconsin, you're not going to get hired because they don't think you actually know what you're fucking doing. We just want to say fuck everyone. We are from Wisconsin. We love each other. We made this film together. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? I think filmmaking, you don't get anywhere by fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Love, man. Love.
Love. Peace, man. Peace and love. No, it is true.
And buttholes.
And buttholes. There's buttholes, too, yes. it is a community that I think a lot of people don't realize. There is a lot of cross. You're more successful. Everybody's films are more successful, it seems, when you've got everybody kind of helping each other out, either in a little way or a lot, and cross talent. And that's really evident, not only in Hole in the Wall, but in all the films that you guys do, definitely there's examples of that where you've got same people who've been on this crew as this crew. And, you know, you get a lot of that. And I think a community thrives better, and you get better films like that because everybody starts to know what type of person the other person is as far as when it comes to the filmmaking. So I know it is evident, definitely in Wisconsin. And if California doesn't like it, yeah, you know.
It's just that was just a thing.
No, I know. I'm just kidding. But
it could be anywhere. I think even take, for example, if it's like Minnesota, director. It's going to be the same thing. Anyone that's not in the big markets, think anyone outside the big markets
right.
don't know what they're fucking doing.
Right. Even those guys that are doing the micro stuff in Chicago, you know, don't get looked at necessarily by the bigger guys in Chicago just because they're from Chicago. They're just like, oh, well, you're no, you know, who are you? Like you said. So, but as long as, you know, I think everybody kind of sticks together and you watch, we all watch each other's stuff. So I think that helps too in the support. So I think we're going to wrap it up now for sure. Glenn, where can we find your stuff, sir?
My stuff right now you can find on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, Naked Hobo Productions. Also, you can find me under the B-Movie Bunker. I'm also on Facebook, and I will be finding other places to put my stuff as well. I'm gonna wag my dick all over the place.
Yeah, you better turn down his mic. Pat is going to get very excited.
Mr. Andrew Shearer, how about you, sir? Pimp your stuff, sir.
If you are not in Athens, Georgia, the best place to watch my stuff is on Amazon Instant Video. The movies are Pajama Nightmare, Mondo Gonzo, and Fake Blood, and soon the Underground Cinema will be on there as well, probably in the next couple of weeks, actually. But those are there. But if you live in Athens, Georgia, or the outlying areas, please come to Athens Cine in downtown Athens on October 24th and 25th. We are in our seventh year of doing our Midnight Movie Festival, and it's just a time when we show all the stuff that all of our crew and satellite crew have been working on all year long. And it's basically an excuse just to get together and see ourselves on the big screen and just trip out at how wild it is to have the dream come true to make cinema has actually happened for us, and we're not cutting on two VCRs anymore. It's just gotten easier and easier, and we sit there and relax and go like, can you freaking believe we're doing this?
Awesome. Yeah, my first college film, one of the only films I've done projects, was on reel to VHS to VHS, so I know that pain. Make sure it's on insert and not the other side.
Yes. Oh. No more.
And Mr. John Pato, where can we find your stuff, sir?
Well, you can find a lot of other people's stuff at the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival this weekend at the Time Community Theater in Oshkosh. $5 a day, $7 for a weekend pass, 43 films from 9 countries, mixture of shorts and features. If you want to know what community is that we're talking about, come to the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival. If you want to see stupid shit that I dead weight on Amazon Instant, on iTunes, or on Hulu, and then pityfilm.com is for the new short film. We got all our screenings. This weekend we are at the Deatherman Film Festival at Phantom Con in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Three Corp Circus in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and at Slaughter Movie House in Kansas City. Or I'm on Facebook and Twitter and that shit.
And finally, Mr. Derek Carey, go ahead, sir, pimp yourself.
As I said before, this weekend, actually, if you're going to be in Strongsville, Ohio, me and Mr. Corey J. Udler are going to be there pimping our wares at Cinema Wasteland. This is literally the first year I'm not going to be at the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival, and it is a little bittersweet because I too believe that that Hole in the Wall should be screening this weekend, because that's the whole reason for its existence is because of that film festival. But irregardless, it's not even a word. Regardless, we are going to be at Cinema Wasteland, debuting the 50-tape VHS run of Hole in the Wall, and you can also go there and see the girl who played with the dead, my dear friend, Mr. Corey J. Udler. We'll be there shilling our fucking asses off all weekend. Come say hi if you're going to be at that film festival. Also, Friday, you can go to Vimeo On Demand /Goryhole and see the VOD premiere of Hole in the Wall. $5 on VOD. Help us out by buying the VHS and by renting it on VOD. You are helping us put money together to fundraise to be able to get you a DVD run. We are completely self-financed production here. We don't have financiers. We don't have a distribution company that's helping us put this out. Every single cent that comes to us from rentals or sales goes back into the film to be able to make DVDs and to make Blu-rays. So
and banners.
And banners, and big banners for Holy Jam. So if you like big banners and you actually want a physical copy of Hole in the Wall, please rent it. We appreciate it. We didn't make Hole in the Wall become rich. We made it because we like making films. Otherwise, you can find Swamphead, BriarwoodEntertainment.com, and soon through Wild Eye Releasing, Screaming High Heels is through Breaking Glass Entertainment. Fuck them. Buy it from someone used. And I also run a series of podcasts called Astro Radio Z and Film Jerks. Check those out if you like Mark's great podcast he has here. He's on it quite a bit. So is Mr. Andrew Shearer and Glenn Bittner. Love
and
all these guys.
And I'm not allowed, apparently.
I've asked you so many fucking times.
When was the last time you asked me?
This is what's going to happen, motherfucker. So what's going to happen is you and I are going to hang out one night. We're gonna be having beers, and then we're going to watch a movie. You're going to go take a piss. I'm gonna put in the Evil Dead remake.
Oh,
you're gonna end up watching that motherfucker.
Nope.
No.
Guys discuss this? The fact that John won't watch Evil Dead remake?
No, not at all.
The show's coming to an end. What are you doing here, dude?
You way to drop this bomb now.
No. Anyways, you can find on iTunes, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Spreaker, anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find Astro Radio Z and the number of podcasts that we have on there. So,
awesome.
If you need to find them at Cinema Wasteland, just look for the biggest fucking banner. And it'll
you know what? The thing is, we're not by a wall, so there is no banner. So
what the fuck ever? He's going to still put it at the front of the table or something.
Nope. We've been there for 2 years now, and he has been banner-free.
Wow.
I'm disappointed.
And, he only rolls it out at that Scottish horror film. He just gets maximum wall space to be able to toss that entire thing all over it. Whole sales table is nothing but Corey J. Udler.
And we are sorry Mr. Udler couldn't make it tonight. He had some things he couldn't be able to make it, and we had another director too that was supposed to make it that unfortunately couldn't make it, but they are here in spirit. I want to thank you guys for a fun time tonight. This is everything and more. If you're interested, you can check my stuff out on youtube.com/specialmark. I'm also on welivefilm.com hosting Horror Thursdays. Plus, I'll be posting any interviews I can possibly get at the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival on the We Live Film Festival channel. And we'll be making a post on the webpage there. So hopefully get some news out and get some word out about this great festival. And you can catch us the Spoiler Room here on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. I'll put links in the description on my webpage, Special Mark Productions. There is a page there dedicated to this podcast. And for the description, I'll put everyone's link, as many as I can, for that there. So you can go there and get the links to all the stuff we've talked about tonight. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for taking time out to talk indie films. I hope that everyone found this informative, and maybe one of you out there even got inspired from these conversations to make your own damn film. So go do it now, and then maybe in a year or two, it'll show up at the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival, because I think John will be taking submissions early, because he just didn't get enough films this year submitted for the short amount of time that the submission process was open. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. This is the Spoiler Room, where the films are spoiled, but the conversation is definitely fresh.